From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Peter Sagal. This week, a review of some of the more memorable celebrity interviews we've done in the segment we call Not My Job. They say that traumas make for the most vivid memories, which is why we remember a particular day in early September 2008. We did our show outdoors at Millennium Park in downtown Chicago. It's a magnificent architectural masterpiece, but it has one tiny flaw. It does not have a roof, which is a problem on the day of the biggest rainstorm of the year. Fortunately, our guest that wet day was a true gamer, Moose Skowron, an all-star veteran of the great Yankees dynasty of the 1950s and early 60s. As panelists Tom Baudet, Paula Poundstone, and Morocco found out, he is a little touchy about his stats, though.
Five World Series victories in total. You played in six World Series?
I played in eight World Series.
Played in eight?
Eight, we won five.
Right.
Four with the Yankees, one with the Dodgers, right. 1963.
Right, and you played with the Yankees in the 1950s with that what they call the second golden era of the Yankees, with Mantle and Joe DiMaggio.
I never played with DiMaggio.
Never played with Joe DiMaggio? No, he retired before you.
He retired in 51, and I got there in 1954. I was with the Yankees 9 years. We won seven pennants.
Wow.
Got to remember, good trivia, the three M's. Maris, Mantle, and Moose. We might have had a few cocktails, but we're not no steroids.
Really?
That's for darn sure.
As they say, you did it on beer.
I said, some of us.
Yeah.
Some of us. I wish to hell I was playing 1 year. I'd be a multimillionaire today.
Yeah.
I made $500,000 in 17 years, and I was in eight World Series. The winning share in the World Series in the 50s was $8,000. And the loser's share was five. Today it's $400,000 for winning and $200,000 for losing.
Yeah. It's like you were playing baseball for NPR.
And you were telling me earlier, you were saying that you guys back in the day were a little tougher than the players today.
Oh, well, if you hit a home run today, like Soriano, and he's watching the ball go over the fence, in our time, if Drysdale or Bob Gibson would be pitching, Soriano would be in the hospital. They wouldn't take that stuff. I mean, Mickey Mantle used to let a lot of long home runs, but when he ran around the bases, he always had his head down. But today it's so different, and now you can't pitch inside to anybody. You might hurt them. I got hit in the head one day. Ike Delock from the Boston Red Sox. I hit a home run off of him, and Ted Williams told me this story. He says, when Ike Delock come back to the bench, he says, the next time Moose comes up, I'm going to hit him right between the eyes. Well, he hit me right in the head. I go to first base. Casey Stengel says, Moose, can you read the scoreboard? I read the scoreboard. I says, God, let my roommate Bob serve hit a ground ball to the shortstop. Hand it to second base. I'll go break up that double play. Who was playing second base? A guy by the name of Gene Mock. I broke his leg. And he never played another game in the major leagues. I didn't do it on purpose. I just happened to. We were taught to break up double plays. Now these guys are afraid to slide because their agent says, don't get hurt. And that's the way it was in the old days. Not like it is today.
Wow, no.
Wow.
I got to ask you one last thing before we play the game. One of the great things players of your era had, of course, was the nicknames. Pee-wee, Dizzy, yours was Moose. Where did it come from?
Well, Grandpa, when I was 7 years old, my grandfather shaved off all my hair. And I got outside, and all the older guys started calling me Mussolini. At that time, he was the dictator of Italy. And as years went on, my first name in Polish is Bolesław Józef Skowron. It means William Joseph Skowron. That's why I got my nickname. And Mickey and Whitey used to always say Bill. I mean, I wouldn't answer them back. If they call me Moose, I talk to them. Other than they like to agitate me, which is fine. I didn't care.
No, you've forgotten all about it.
Well, Moose, we are so delighted to have you with us here.
Thank
we
you.
Have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You're bad, you're dangerous, you're invincible. And now you're eligible to join the AARP.
As hard as it is to believe, entertainer Michael Jackson turned 50 last week.
Oh, my heavens.
He celebrated, he says, with a quiet party at home, watching cartoons with his kids. And it is a tribute to his remarkable history and place in our culture that in this case, watching cartoons with the kids sounds really creepy. Nonetheless, we're going to ask you, Moose, three questions about the king of pop. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carol Castle, singing The Man in the Mirror on their home answering device.
Wow.
Carl, who is Moose Skarman playing for?
Peter, he is playing for Quinetta Daniels of Chicago.
So here we go. First question. Everyone knows that for a while, Mr. Jackson's best friend was a pet chimpanzee he called Bubbles. But he didn't want Bubbles merely for companionship. He said the chimp also worked for his monkey chow. How did he do that? A, Bubbles had an excellent ear. If Bubbles screeched along to a new song, Jackson could be sure it would be a hit. Was it B, Bubbles, a neat and tidy chimp, routinely cleaned Mr. Jackson's bedroom? Or C, Bubbles, using crayons and finger paint, created artworks which fetched thousands of dollars in auction?
A or B, you want me to say A,
I want
B
you to say
or
A, B or C? He was either, he listened to the music and told him whether it was good or
I'll
bad.
I say A.
You're going to say he listened to the music. If Bubbles screeched in a chimpanzee fashion, Mr. Jackson would know that the song was a good one, if Bubbles
right.
liked it. That's a great idea, but no, it was actually B. He cleaned Mr. Jackson's bedroom. So according to Mr. Jackson, Michael Jackson said this in some unaired footage in that famous BBC documentary. He said Bubbles would dust the bedroom. All right, you still have two more chances.
Okay.
Yeah, just strike one. But now, you know, that's nothing. That's nothing. You still have two more strikes. Here we go. During the early 1990s, crew members who worked on his various films, videos, and other projects had to sign a contract in which they had to agree to do what? A, to refer to Mr. Jackson at all times in the third person, as in, would Mr. Jackson like his lunch now? B, not ever, ever to stare at him. Or C, to only listen to Michael Jackson's music on their Walkman CD players or stereos during the shoot.
I'll say A.
You're going to say A, that they had referred, if somebody came up to Michael Jackson, instead of saying, would you, sir, they'd say, would Mr. Jackson. No, actually, it was B. They were not allowed to stare at him.
It was so close.
I know. Last question.
Oh, God.
Here we go. Even though he's 50 years old now, Michael Jackson is not slowing down. According to a British tabloid, what is the king of pop up to these days? A, he's writing an autobiographical opera in which he will play himself at all stages of his life. B, he's creating a line of frozen foods called Come Eat with Michael. Or C, he's dating bodacious actress Pamela Anderson.
I say C.
You're going to go for Pamela Anderson.
Yeah.
You're right. He's dating Pamela Anderson.
Thank God.
According to the Daily Mirror tabloid, Michael Jackson has had two private meetings in Malibu with a 41-year-old former Baywatch star, once for drinks, once for coffee. I presume they discussed things of mutual interest like being a divorced parent, the trappings of fame, plastic surgery. Carl, how did Moose Skarman do on our show?
Peter, he had one correct answer, but Moose needed two to win for Quinetta Daniels.
Mm. But he does win the consolation prize, which is Pamela Anderson.
Exactly true. Moose Skarman is a six-time All-Star first baseman.
Eight-time All-Star. Eight World Series and eight All-Stars.
Eight World Series, eight All-Stars. A Chicago baseball legend, Moose Skarman. So delighted to have you with us. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the Moose. Bravo.
In March of 2008, Carl and I went with panelists Roy Blunt Jr., Charlie Pierce, and Paula Poundstone down to Birmingham, Alabama, and we were honored to meet there Jimmy Carter, the leader of the legendary gospel group The Blind Boys of Alabama. He told us the story of how his group got their starkly descriptive name.
Well, The Blind Boys of Alabama met at the Talladega Institute for Deaf and Blind. This school was funded by the state of Alabama. And all of the blind children that wanted to get an education came to that school. So that's how we met. We started singing together in 1939. We started out as the Happyland Jubilee Singers. The blind boys, that name came years later. That's another story entirely.
Well, how did that happen?
Well, I don't have time to tell it.
Oh, we got all... We got all the time you need.
Well, that was another group of blind people called the Jackson Harmoniers out of Jackson, Mississippi. And they started out about the same time the Blind Ball of Alabama did. And this guy, this promoter of gospel music in Newark, New Jersey, thought up this gimmick. He said, I'm going to bring the Blind Ball of Alabama and the Blind Ball of Mississippi to Newark, New Jersey in a battle of music. That's how the Blind Balls got their name.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy Newark? Because I'm thinking that you'd have to be blind to do so. And I'm from New Jersey. I get to say that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you've been singing gospel music then for, 54, 55 years on the road professionally.
Maybe.
Yeah? Were you ever tempted in all those years to dip into other forms of music, to try your hands?
No.
So many came and went while you were doing it.
Yeah, well, you know, Sam Cooke did. And we were all the same. The same time he got his offer, the Blind Ball had the offer too, but we turned it down.
Really?
The same day.
The same day?
The same day.
And you turned it down?
Turned it down.
Why?
We wanted to sing gospel music. We were a dedicated gospel group, and we promised the Lord that we would never deviate from that. So we are still here. And we're going to stay here until he says that's enough.
We understand, we are told that you have that one of your roles with the group is and has always been, you're the guy who likes to go out in the audience and get everybody excited. Is that true?
That's correct.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You still do that?
Still do it.
Yeah. How do you do that? You just walk out there and...
Well, no, I have a guy that takes me out.
And what do you do when you get out there into the big halls?
I just get out there and just do my thing.
Jimmy, have you ever had kind of a dead crowd that didn't respond even when you're trying to get them going?
Well, you know, when I walk out, I tell them this. I say, now, the Blind Boys do not like a conservative crowd.
You'd like them to give it up.
Mm-hmm. We like a noisy crowd.
Yeah. 99 won't do.
99 won't do. Got to be 100.
There you go.
Let me ask you this. You've been, one of the things that's happened last decade or so, maybe even longer, you guys have really been embraced by mainstream music. You've sung with a lot of musicians, have invited you to sing with them on their records and concerts. You've been put in movies on the Broadway stage. How's that been for you? Because you've labored for so long in the gospel world, now you're...
Well, you know, I always say, this is my philosophy, better late than never.
There you go. I just got to ask you one last question. We've been doing this with all the musicians that have been coming in the show in the last year or so. And this is interesting because this is the first time we've put it to a pure singer. What do you think, Jimmy Carter, is the sexiest musical instrument? So, for example, we asked that to Branford Marsalis. He thought it was the saxophone. Weird Al Yankovic thought it was the accordion. Surprise. So, you who don't play an instrument per se other than your own voice, what do you think is the sexiest instrument?
My voice.
There right. You go.
I think we've got a band now.
I think so. I think so.
Put all those guys together.
Well, Jimmy Carter, we are so thrilled to have you with us here. We have asked you here to play a game with us, and we are calling it
You Don't Even Like Peanuts.
We're guessing that you have spent a fair bit of time since the 1970s either apologizing to audiences or reassuring them, more likely, that they weren't about to be serenaded by the 39th President of the United States. So we're going to see how much you know, sir, about the other Jimmy Carter. Get two out of these three questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. Carl, who is the more fun Jimmy Carter playing for?
Well, Jimmy is playing for Barry Nichols of Anniston, Alabama.
All right, Jimmy, here we go. Jimmy Carter entered the race as only a one-term ex-governor of Georgia. What did his mother, known as Miss Lillian, say when he told her he was running for president? Did she say, A, quote, that's nice, son, and I'll be your empress? Did she say, B, quote, did Billy put you up to this? Or did she say, quote, president of what?
I'm going to take C.
You can take C. President of what?
Yeah.
Very good, sir. Yes. Very good. Now, Jimmy Carter gets criticized a lot for his various failures as president, stagflation, the Iran hostage crisis. But he did accomplish at least one inarguably good thing. What was it? Was it A, he made home brewing of beer legal throughout the land? B, he allowed children in the White House lawn Easter egg roll to use spoons rather than their noses? Or C, via an executive order, he finally allowed cabinet members to remove their ties at work?
Okay, I'm going to say B.
You're going to say B, he allowed children in the White House lawn Easter egg roll to use spoons rather than their noses. That's your choice?
That's my choice.
I'm afraid not now. It was actually home brewing.
Really?
It was home brewing. In 1979, President Jimmy Carter signed a law easing federal restrictions on brewing your own beer. However, some states kept their own restrictions on it, including, I am very sorry to say, Alabama.
Oh.
Well, this is very exciting, Jimmy, because if you get this last question right, you'll win it all. So you have one right with one to go. Here we go.
Yeah.
Here's your last question. Carter famously tried to make the White House seem more relaxed than it had been under his predecessor, Richard Nixon. In fact, the White House got so relaxed, what once happened? Was it A, presidential guest Willie Nelson went up to the roof of the White House and smoked a joint? B, President Carter once received his daily intelligence briefing in the Oval Office while wearing his bathrobe and Mr. Peanut slippers? Or C, the red hotline phone from the Soviet Union went unanswered for 4 minutes because the president and his aides were playing trash can basketball?
I'm going to say B again.
You're going to go for B. President Carter once received his intelligence briefing in the Oval Office wearing a bathrobe and Mr. Peanut slippers.
Silver, yeah.
It was A. It was what? Willie Nelson.
Oh.
Willie Nelson. He played a concert at the White House. And then he says he went up to the roof to smoke a, quote, Austin blunt.
Well, I know he's capable of it.
Yeah, I was about to say. I'm surprised, because I bet you've met Willie Nelson in your travels, have you not?
Yeah, I have.
And you'd probably...
I didn't smoke nothing with him, though.
No. I'm just saying you would. Carl, how did our Jimmy Carter do talking about the other one?
Well, Jimmy needed at least two correct answers to win for Barry Nichols, but this Jimmy had just one correct answer.
Sorry, Barry.
Well, you know.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, I think so. Jimmy Carter is one of the founding members of the Blind Boys of Alabama gospel group. They're on tour across the country in support of their new album, Down in New Orleans. For more information, you can go to blindboys.com. Jimmy Carter, thank you so much for joining us. Jimmy Carter, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, sir.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme, Technical Direction, by Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our program is produced by Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Thanks to all our guests, all our panelists, to Carl Castle, and of course to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal, and we'll be back next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.